Hey, this is Cleveland Brown, and you're listening to the About Last Night podcast. I guess your TV must be broken. Haha, just kidding. Actually, I'm not kidding. You're bored.
Hey, guys, Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. How are you? Thanks for listening. Hope you had a great weekend. I had a freaking fantastic weekend, man. In Chicago, Illinois, at Zany's in Rosemont. Holy shit, what a club. What a weekend, man. Shows were unbelievable. Feeling really good about my hour of stand-up right now. So hopefully going to lay that down soon for a special, you know. There's no rush on that. You want to do it in the right time, and I'm trying to think of other ways to put it out there, you know, creatively, like not just stand-up in the special. Obviously, Avery Pearson, that'll be an element of it, the improvised music we've been doing, the improvised crowd work music, but, you know, you want to do it right, the first one, so, but I'm getting closer. So it was a blast. Thanks to everybody that came out. Thanks to all the ALN fans. So many of you guys. Jody Collins, shout out to you, ALN fan of the week, baby. This motherfucker drove from, what was it, Detroit to Chicago? Maybe Wisconsin to Detroit to Chicago? He took a trains, planes, and automobiles type journey to see the show and was so sweet. And big ALN fan. And dude, thank you for coming. Jody Collins, email us at aboutlastnightpod@gmail.com. And we'll send you some ALN merch, all right? Send us your address and we'll send you some free shit. Thanks for listening to the pod, dude. This week is a busy week of tour dates. Wednesday, August 30th, 8 p.m. I'm headlining the Hollywood Improv here in Los Angeles, California. Wednesday, 8 p.m. Josh Wolf, Andrew Santino also on the show. My boy Avery Pearson. Come out. Get your tickets at AdamRayComedy.com. Hollywood Improv, 8 p.m. Wednesday, August 30th. And then August 31st, I'll be headlining the Ontario Improv. First time in Ontario, California. That's the Inland Empire. August 30th, 8 p.m. Thursday. Get your tickets at AdamRayComedy.com. And then, of course, West Palm Beach Improv just added. I will be there September 7th through the 9th at West Palm Beach Improv, bringing Sandy Danto and Avery Pearson. Super pumped. Get your tickets at AdamRayComedy.com. That's West Palm Beach Improv, September 7th through the 9th, baby. Brad Williams got back from Guam. Holy shit. If you listen to our podcast with Bert Kreischer, the Birdcast, 4 hours. We ended with some Guam hilarity, and I don't know if Brad was going to come back, but he is, because he's getting married this weekend, baby. Can't wait to talk about that. That's going to be amazing. And then after that, Brad heads to Kansas City to do the improv September 14th through the 16th, so get your tickets to bradwilliamscomedy.com. Today's episode, man, continuing in our streak of 90s teen heartthrobs. I hope you guys enjoyed that Freddie Prinze Jr. episode. It was unbelievable. And we're going to just keep it rolling with another unbelievable episode with stories and experiences and just a conversation that was just, you know, the total package. Andrew Keegan is our guest today. Andrew Keegan, you might know him from Camp Nowhere, from Seventh Heaven. He was Jessica Biel's boyfriend. You might know him from 10 Things I Hate About You. Countless TV shows, Step by Step, Full House. Go look up his IMDb page. He's been in everything and anything. Man, he talks about 10 Things I Hate About You, working with Heath Ledger, filming Camp Nowhere. A lot of great behind-the-scenes stories, too, from these sets, like him and Heath and Julia Stiles getting high, and just the business, too, how he got into it at a young age and how he almost got American Pie, and just a real, real fun chat, man. And he also shares a lot of insights into Full Circle, which is a open source spiritual community center that offers growth oriented workshops and other events. And it's just a place that helps you, you know, passionately seek to inspire and empower the community around you. And it's a very supportive, loving colony of people, open door policy. And he started this thing from the ground up, and it's pretty incredible to see and hear what he did with that. He's a Venice dude, living in Venice and still working. And, dude, it was just a great chat, you know? A guy, too, that, like, has been on every teen girl's wall from those Teen Beat, Teen Bop magazines with him, JTT, and Devin Sawa, and Jonathan Brandis. So, Andrew's the shit. I met him briefly because he guest starred on Hollywood Darlings, which was the other show that partnered with Return of the Mac on Pop TV. And I met Andrew at the premiere, and we started shooting the shit, and I got his email. I said, I would love to have you on the podcast, and we made it happen. So, really great dude, even better in person then, you know, guys like that, you just don't know. You know, you don't know. He was super chill when I talked to him, but I didn't know he was going to deliver like he did on the podcast. So I really can't wait for you guys to listen to this episode. Follow Andrew on Twitter at Keegan_Drew. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy, at Funny Brad, at Alien Podcast. Brad Williams Comic on Instagram, at Adam Ray Comedy on Instagram, ALN Podcast on Instagram, aboutlastnightpodcast.com for all your ALN merch and past episodes and present episodes. Speaking of which, Thursday, looking like the day, baby, we're going to release the new site and the merch, so be on the lookout. Hopefully. That is about 90% sure, so keep your fingers crossed. Can't wait for that. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes to the podcast, rate and comment on the iTunes page, tweet at us. And let us know that you loved an episode, what you loved about it. Email us at aboutlastnightpod@gmail.com with your ALN highlights, favorite moments, how you get into the pod, where you listen to it. And again, we'll read some of these moments on air and send you some free merch for being a great fan. All right. Great eps coming up. Sarah Tiana, TJ Miller, another big Academy Award winner who's in a movie with John Rudnitsky. I can't say more than that. Joey Lawrence, Joey McIntyre's coming back. Brent Morin's coming back. A lot of fun, so make sure you subscribed. All right, now we've got the tour dates, Twitter handles, and merch info out of the way. Sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the one and only Andrew Keegan.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. It's about last night.
We do a...
Oh, yeah.
He said, I'm here. I said, look for the dwarf and follow instructions.
I mean, that's pretty much the start of any fantasy novel.
Yeah. Well, we just talked about the other day how people that... Because, you know, the windows in these apartment complex are all pretty, like... Like, a lot of the people can, like, look into the middle of the complex, and it's like, you know, Brad comes over sometimes 3-4 times a week, and, like... You know, there's. I don't think anybody in this complex knows I do a podcast. So like 3-4 times a week, they're just seeing a little person come over, and they're just like, "What the fuck is going on over there?"
I mean, the one time that I walked in a full leather outfit and a ball gag.
Yeah,
that.
Well, they probably knew what was going on there.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously. Yeah, either that or the people that see the street, they go, "You know what? I see these random celebrities just show up, and then a dwarf runs out and gets them and brings them into the building. I don't know what the hell is happening here."
Yeah, that's probably actually what's like, all right, so do I just kind of, I don't want to twist it out.
No, dude, just grab it and just fucking, you know.
Ooh. Grab it, pull it towards your face. Put your hand on it gently. Don't be too aggressive. It's kind of expensive.
This way?
Yeah, just leave the mic, but like maybe you...
Oh, I move this way.
You're good. Oh, really?
We don't want the mic blocking here.
How about that? You can have it close and probably closer to your face.
My first time being a disc jockey. Right?
You do have that radio voice.
All right. It's interesting when you hear yourself.
Right?
Huh. That's why you do this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we
love the sound of our own pipes.
That's pretty. I mean, we don't care about talking to people. We don't care about learning about the process. We're just
circular experience.
Just narcissists.
Voice.
That's it. We just like to hear the sound of our own voice.
Sounds
that's
like
it.
America, right?
Didn't you do voiceover work when you first started?
You know, I've done some. Yeah. Not, you know, I did one of those workshops at one point, and I don't think I was very good.
Oh no.
Yeah, it left me with, I don't think
you were,
I'm
like Bud Light's
actor.
The best. They're like, it's Cheetos, dumbass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they probably thought like, well, we have Andrew Keegan, why are we making it just his voice? We gotta put that punim in front of the camera. Yeah, use the word punim. I'm starting to bring punim back.
Punim back. What does that mean?
That's like a Yiddish.
I don't know. I think it's a Yiddish thing that means
I've heard
face.
My super Jewish mom say it, and then she's, I feel like, said it was Yiddish.
Yiddish.
Punim. It's like an affectionate, like, oh, you my little punim, you know, like. So Brad was hitting on you.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
That's absolutely 1,000% true. We're in West Hollywood. I'm just trying to blend in.
Yeah, for sure.
Good.
And then you've lived out here your whole life.
Are we already doing this?
Yeah,
we
just darn right. Right in. We're going.
There's no opener. Like, this is a podcast.
We could give you a cheesy open, like, hey, ladies and gentlemen, we're here on the About Last Night podcast. It is Brad Williams and Adam Reid. Our special guest today, Mr. Andrew Keegan. See, and then we do the fake
that's
applause.
That's going to make it.
Yeah.
See, that's why we don't do it, because Brad gets all jazzed up.
Like yeah, that. And I just get I've had some radio days, and then I kind of like flash back to that, and you know, hey, we got stacks of tracks to play here on a Friday night, you know, and that's just bad.
See, now that is talent. Now I know why he's here.
Is that what you call it?
that's talent.
Have you did you have to for press junkets like do morning radio stuff for movies?
You know, I did.
Yeah.
That was a little while back.
Did you enjoy that part of the...
Yeah, I mean, this is fun. We yeah. go out and talk and hang out at yeah, right? a studio somewhere. Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Because we, you know, we have to do it like almost every weekend for like, you know, when we do a weekend at a comedy club, it's like you do the morning press or TV, and sometimes they're it's just hit or miss. They're just so... You don't even know if they're there or listening. They're just like so hopped up on coffee at 6 a.m. And
it's kind of like what we were saying earlier. They just like hearing themselves.
For sure.
You got to jump in
yeah,
once in a while.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, wow, you asked me a question, then you answered it. Right, okay, right. I don't really need to be here.
There's like two or three of them, too. They just go back and forth.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I thought I was supposed to answer a question.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you guys even want me here?
Exactly.
Being in LA and being born and raised out here, were you like always intrigued by the business? Was it something that always had your interest?
Yeah, I think I really grew up, you know, in LA. Being in LA, it was always around. But both of my parents were in the industry, so my mom did
oh, nice.
Hair. My father mm-hmm. was an aspiring actor, so he ended up a lot of extra work and always on set, but not exactly, you know, literally in front of the camera and
yeah,
the
way
right. he wanted to be. So I think that was probably one of the you know driving forces. You know, family's doing it, and I'm a kid, and I'm like, I'll do it.
You're around it. Seems
yeah.
fun, right?
Let's do
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I mean, anything to get out of school is fun.
Yeah,
so that was,
dude.
I think a big. I mean, that was a big driving.
You forget
force.
That is such a driving force of any kid to yeah. do something that's not like missing it, school is like so rebellious.
I'll yeah. blow your mind. I don't know what spawned this idea to look on the internet and search, but I found my first commercial, which was a Frosted Mini Wheats commercial.
Yes.
Yes.
I was 12 years old and I did a Frosted Mini Wheats commercial. It was like me and my grandma, like, grandma thinks something and there's frosting. I don't remember yeah, yeah, the yeah. line. But so that was my first real experience.
I like plain mini wheats. You mm. need frosting on them, grandma. Exactly. Otherwise, you're not cool.
And it was like back where they were just starting to figure out the camera moves and it was like a drop. You know, the Frosted Mini Wheat went in my mouth and the camera came down. So that was like my first experience. I got out of school. I was 12 years old. The commercial came out like 3 months later. And of course,
your most popular kid at school, right?
Taste of, yeah, it was like, wow, we saw you on my morning commercial or cartoons in your commercial. And so oh. that was my first real taste.
Wait, the commercial was packaged in between morning cartoons?
Of course.
Oh, I mean,
it was
dude.
A Frosted Mini Wheats commercial.
That's prime.
Where else would you
Mini
play
Wheats
that?
Buys that new, big
ABC
ad.
News? No, it's... Yeah. News at 11 and Frosted Mini Wheats.
Yeah. It ran during 2020. So you have Barbara Walters and that just leads right
dude,
in.
So you were in between like Doug reruns and like.
Yeah. Oh, you remember.
Fuck oh, yeah, that's. Come on, man. That's our wheelhouse. Oh,
man, I'm racking my brain. What was the duck one?
DuckTales.
DuckTales.
Darkwing Duck. I mean, Disney I mean, Afternoon, probably. You were all over that
there
shit.
Was, good. It was Tailspin. So good. A lot of duck Tailspin. Related cartoons back mm-hmm. in the day.
Gummy
and now,
bears.
Look, we got one for a president.
Oh, yeah, we do. No, we do. We can do. It. We can make the
it's fine
from mini wheats to Trump.
That was what a segment. Yeah. What a segue.
But I mean,
wait, that, I want to know though, yeah. real quick. Like being at school, then after you do that, because that's like, I mean, for any, I don't know if there's any prep course for like a child actor to like experience that amount of adulation and attention, right? Like when you're at school afterwards, is it like? Are you immediately cool with it, or is it like
it was,
overwhelming?
You know, at the time, I actually had some kind of a you know bully experience, so and the memories are vague.
Oh shit!
So it worked to a degree, you know, and it was good for to a degree, but it also got you sort of that other kind of attention where it's like, oh, you're that guy, you know.
Yeah.
So it's sort of both sides of it.
Kids deflect. They're like, yeah. they're almost seeing it and be like, that's so cool, but then oh, you think you're better than us now?
Yeah.
Just because you get free mini wheats?
Exactly.
You're like, well, obviously that does make me better than you.
If you pulled up in like a mini wheat van and a mini wheat jumpsuit,
I should have worked it
let
out.
Let me live a normal life.
Just given everybody a lifetime supply of mini wheats, yeah. and then it would have been great.
Yeah.
And then yeah. and as it continued too, there was you know working outside of school and having to get the teachers to get you your schoolwork became another you know a thorn of contention with the teachers.
Yeah.
Because it's like oh special attention. So right. in a weird way, it did have sort of an adverse effect over those years. As well, so
and would you be gone for like weeks, months, sometimes?
Just you know, there were a couple of films because I was in school when I did Camp Nowhere, of course. And so yes. That was,
oh my God. Classic. I mean,
let me be honest, one of the greatest movies of all time.
Working with Christopher Lloyd at 15 yes. years old was really very cool.
And you recognize how dope that was, right? Oh, I mean, God. Like, yeah. 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 He, I mean, you had, what did
you're 15,
you...
so you had seen Back to the Future at that point.
Oh, of course. But he really was not necessarily super excited about working with, like, 5 15-year-olds. So it wasn't like we had a whole lot of camaraderie yeah. there. A couple sure. scenes. I mean, he was, you know, he was in his trailer and yeah. didn't necessarily want to come hang out with us. Sure. I didn't understand.
Yeah, right.
Now I understand.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally. I don't hang out with 15-year-olds.
Breaking
news.
Yeah. And I'm only 38. He was even older.
Yeah.
Where did you guys shoot that?
We shot it in the LA area. Placerita Canyon was where a lot of the camp was. But I'll never forget, the first day of our rehearsals were January 17th, and I'm going to say 1994.
Yeah.
So it was the year of the earthquake, the day of the earthquake.
No shit.
Oh, the first day.
So I was so excited. It was like my first movie. I'd done the commercial. I had done a few things along, but this is my first
movie.
And
you're like a big part in it, right?
I mean, yeah, like that, yeah. like one of the leads.
Yeah, dude.
So
yeah.
I went to Disney, the building, and the window was crashed in. And it was like... I guess we're not rehearsing today, but yes. I was like, I was going.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I thought maybe we were still rehearsing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a 6.9, whatever. Yeah. We grew up in California.
Yeah, dude, you're probably like very not just conditioned to expect earthquakes. Yeah.
You know, there's two kinds of earthquakes. There's the rolling ones, and then there was what January 17th was just a pounder. Mm-hmm. And so that was actually a much different experience, and that was frightening.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm a local too. I grew up in Orange County, and like when I went to college and my roommate was from Texas, the first earthquake we had was like a 5.2 mm-hmm. and he freaked the fuck out. Like this was like a dog running around barking like, oh my God, what's happening? It's fucking Armageddon. I barely woke up. I'm like, dude, it's like 5.0. Like, we can tell. Locals can tell. Like, it's a 5.2. No big deal.
Yeah.
You can
still get Chipotle. The world isn't ending.
Right. You kind of do one of those things where you're like, as it's going, you're like, yeah, this isn't going to be, no, we're good.
Yeah,
we're good.
Yeah, we're fine. Yeah.
Second to that.
Yeah. And being on that first movie, Camp Nowhere, that kind of had to help being that there was a lot of other like kids on the movie. It wasn't just all adults and you were completely out of place.
Well, you know, I like this little bit of trivia to and maybe I should see if you guys know this.
For sure.
Geez, fire away.
So you know the obvious people in the movie.
Yes. Yeah.
But did you know that Jessica Alba was in that movie?
What?
Yup.
Did
her
not
first,
know that.
Her first movie. She was Kissing Girl 1. So Jessica Alba's first
Whoa.
Movie too.
That's like did you know
Hollywood.
Matthew McConaughey was in Angels in the Outfield, you know?
I did not know that.
See?
Ah, so we're
is he?
Now who's
and Adrian Brody.
Adrian Brody was in
Angels in the Outfield. Dude, they're both like other like they're two outfielders.
All of Adam's trivia revolve around the movie Angels in the Outfield.
Anything Tony Danza did, I know everything about.
There's a lot, but there's a lot of working actors in when they finally hit. They've been doing stuff for years, you know. So.
Yeah.
Did you and Alba have any, rapport? And you're like, someday we'll date on another show.
Look, we were all 15 years old. I'm going to leave it to your imagination. It was all very innocent.
That's the best.
You're 15 and you're on a movie set with essentially no adults.
You're like, we're filming Camp Nowhere. Maybe we can see if this can sexually go somewhere. You know.
We have trailers. We have trailers. Why would they give us trailers?
To sleep in? No.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So what was the audition process like for that? Is it
that was a tough one.
Yeah.
They at that point to take you through the ringer. I think, you know, and I'm so excited and I just want to get a job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every kid, it's like a game.
Once you got a taste of it, you were like, all right, I'm in. Is that pretty much how it worked for you?
Yeah, it's overcoming the fear, I think, and that's sort of an overriding life experience. You're overcoming the fear of the audition, then into, you know, can I do this? 15 years old. I mean, I had very little experience. All of the kids had very little experience. And, you know, it was a beautiful experience, like just to be that age and to have that opportunity. It's awesome. Get out of school and go and make a movie that all your friends are going to see. It was really cool.
Were you nervous for auditions, or did your folks kind of give you some advice?
I think you're always, awkward. Anybody has been on an
audition.
It's not
normal.
It's the most awkward thing ever.
Just walk in, there's four people, sometimes more,
chair.
Just staring at you going, impress us.
Right.
And as cool and organic as you can make the small talk too, it's like never normal.
No.
Because it's just such a weird way to, like, you know you're waiting to go in, they know you're waiting, like it's just like who's gonna say something first? Like I sometimes just panic and walk in and I go, the band's back together, just immediately, and they're all like, what? I'm like, I don't know, guys. Like, you know, I didn't want you to speak first because like you probably wouldn't have said something weird like that, and now we're getting into it, and they're like, okay. Sometimes it works, and sometimes they're like, you want to just read the scene? And I'm like, okay,
yeah,
great.
Yeah, that's the one. I think that, and all of the auditions I've probably done, at least hundreds, if not thousands, of auditions over the years. But yeah, there's definitely been a few of those moments. It didn't start off right,
dude.
I'll never forget The Quick and the Dead. That was ended up being a Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, that was movie. The Sharon Stone Western movie.
I came in, and I think I was coming out of like the volleyball scene. I was like 13, 14, and I called the cast director. Just kind of was like, "Hey, babe," slipped it in there. Whoa, that didn't go over well at all.
Really, the casting director doesn't like me. Call her babe.
You know, go figure from like a 15-year-old. I was just trying to be
nice.
Yeah,
but you were ahead of the curve. You were 15, but you had 18-year-old swagger.
I think so. That was a swagger. That got me in trouble.
Andrew Keegan sexually harassing since 15. Yeah. All right.
Hey, babe is not. You know, that's an endearing.
Doesn't make it.
Yeah. I mean that's an endearing. You know what though? Also, your intention was genuine. You know, you were just like, yo, like I'm.
It was a kind of a slang
at
the time. We were, you know, in that kind of scene, if you will. And it didn't go over well. Speaking of awkward moments.
Were you, was Leo one of the guys you were, like, who was the crew that you would go to auditions? You know, I feel like you always hear those stories. It was like, me and this guy and Breckenmeyer. Well, and
you know that, I don't remember ever seeing Leo at an audition. Yeah. He started young. He was getting movie offers from pretty much the beginning. But you know, I just did a film actually with Thomas Ian Nicholas.
Nice.
So he's
been on the podcast.
Yeah. He's really great.
He's the best.
We did a film some years ago with this vampire documentary style film. And so, we would always see
cross
each
paths,
other.
Yeah.
And ended up, you know, we kind of have a similar type. So, you know, you ended up in the room with those kind of guys.
I would imagine people have looked at him and said, hey, loved you and 10 Things I Hate About You. And have probably looked at you and said, oh, yeah, you're great in American Pie. And you're like, not me, but
that's an interesting story.
Yes.
I'll share real quickly. I was shooting 10 Things and came down and met with them, the filmmakers of American Pie, and was going to do that film.
Yeah.
And it was back and forth, and it's a longer story that I don't need to get into, but you know, back and forth, agents are working it out, and the schedule of the 10 Things, they had a crossover of a music band or something. I think it was
Save Ferris,
I think.
Yeah, I was there in that scene. We'll talk about that later.
Oh, that's
I'm great. An extra in that scene. Yeah. I'm from Seattle.
Man. This is crazy. We were just talking about it.
No, we met before this. We met before this. Yeah, I'll tell you. Yeah.
We this is going to be good.
Yeah.
So to wrap that up, we ended up not happening for me, but then saying it ends up being Thomas Ian Nicholas, which yes, I've heard that many times. You're great in American Pie. I was like, you don't know how close that was, actually.
That happens so often, right? Just scheduling like jam ups.
A day crossover, which would have been a totally different life experience. Like literally, I was gonna do the movie. I had the script, I was gonna do it, and we just waited.
Good in that.
It just would have been a different.
Yeah.
You know, and I look back and I'm, you know, of course, what do they make? 3, 4, 10 films?
Sure.
Yeah. So at $1 million a pop, you're you know, 10 Things is great as it is.
Yeah.
Or at least give me that day off.
Yeah.
And what got me is they didn't end up needing me that day.
Oh, I was just like, no, man.
You were just sitting on the side like, just well, I guess your consolation is a free Save Ferris concert?
Yeah, well, no, I actually I've been talking to them about coming down and doing a show at in Venice. So it's a weird full circle story, but yes.
Dude, that's amazing.
Yeah, you could have simulated oral sex with Tara Reid.
That could have happened. Like I said, there are some silver linings to this not happening.
I hope that's what you say on your deathbed. You're about to go and like, Andrew, what sort of knowledge, what sort of thoughts do you have on your life? Simulated oral sex with Tara Reid.
Or it's like, thank God.
Thank God I didn't. Yeah, thank God I'm not tied to that memory.
I would have died 20 years earlier.
Probably.
You guys shot in Seattle the whole time on 10 Things,
right? We were in Tacoma mostly.
At Stadium High School, right?
Yeah. Yes. So tell me your story, now I'm curious.
Born and raised, and the party scene, I think there was a line where a kid... Basically, before a fight happened at the party, and he turned around and he goes, fight!
That was me.
Yeah, you got in the fight. But there was a kid at the party who said fight.
Okay, fight first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because so I had a scene, or I had a moment
That was right when you got punched in the face. or something?
No, that was at the prom scene.
No, prom scene.
No, there was like a house, the house party. Yeah.
But I have a specific scene. There's like the beer stack, and I turn around. I think I repeat. He says it.
Yep.
Is that you?
No, that was going to be me.
Oh.
But as Brad said, I wasn't a good enough actor.
No, because he can't have one line.
But they told me, they go, you don't look like a partier enough. And I was like in eighth grade, so I was like, all right, I guess. But like, and that's when the drinking started. No.
Right. You're like, oh, fine. I'll go home over the weekend. I'll do a lot of cocaine. Yeah. I'll come back and I'll show you guys like a party.
They called me Tequila Ray that following morning. So then they were like, well, do you want to be an extra in the movie? And I'm like, fuck yeah, man. I'm like, eighth grade summer going into freshman year of high school. It's like, being a movie, like all you guys, I like grew up like it's like, I, you know, Krumholtz and Heath and all you guys and Alex Mack, and I'm like, fuck yeah, dude, I just want to be on set and be around that. And so it was the prom scene. They paired us up, and you know, I was just telling these guys that like I kept furthering myself from the girl that I was paired with because I was trying to get in the fucking line of the camera. I was like, I want to be in a movie, and when I go see it with my friends, be able to be like, there's me, that guy fist bumping, yeah, that's me, early Pauly D. And so, it was, 3 days that prom shoot. And we, you know, remember like, and Safe Ferris was there. And then there was a lot of just like dancing to like, dun, 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 you know,
right,
and
right.
They
play that beat in the background. It's pantomime, they say.
Yeah. And like there was,
did you talk to Andrew at all? Did you meet him?
I said, like, I went around, I mean, just like way too much confidence. I was like, I'm going to say what up to all the stars. And so I went up to everybody and like said what up, and you were way cool, man. I was like, what's up, man? You're like, what's up? And I was like, fun movie, right? And you were like, yeah, dude, it's the best. And I was like, it is the best. All right, see you later, Andrew Keegan. So, but I went, everybody was chill, you know? And then, you know, there was that one scene when you got punched in the prom scene. And, you know, shit, Bianca, I got a nose job ad. And then there was this, they told us in the scene, they were like, all right, everybody be huddled around, you know, when you're on the ground, and there was like this overhead shot. And then everybody like slowly just like, as the camera pulls up, everybody like disperse and like go back to the party. And again, another moment, another Adam Ray, like, I'm going to soak up the moment and be noticed. So like everyone kind of walks away. And then I just like lingered like right next to you as like you're laying on the ground. And I just kind of like, I stood there and like walked in a circle like I didn't know where to go, just so I could be like, there's me.
Did it work?
Yeah, man. Yes. That shot stayed in.
All right.
But I was like, the director at one point did come over and he was like, hey man, like you're really like, you're shit, you're fist pumping too much, like you're just like, tone it down, like we know you're having fun at the prom, but like it's a little distracting. I was like, all good, I'm definitely doing it again.
Well, but that's something that like if you're doing extra work, you always want to be somehow in the shot. You want to do the crazy thing. I mean, I think the classic story of that was, I think it was Michael J. Fox Teen Wolf, where the extra actually pulls out his balls during the scene, and it made the cut. It's pretty hilarious. It's
I did not know.
Yeah.
Can we Google that?
Yeah.
I will confirm too many things, but I want to just confirm that happened.
I will pull that up.
How was that?
Just don't pull it out.
Yeah.
How was that experience shooting in Tacoma? Because that is considered like the butthole of Washington State, but where you guys shot is not. Like, that's actually a nice area.
You know, I do remember the smell.
Yeah.
There was the paper mill factory right there, so it would come in different waves. Although I believe that the smell in our hotel suites overrode that. So that was a good excuse for what was going on in the hotel room. I'll leave it to your imagination.
Yeah.
But
Jessica Alba was not in that movie.
She was not in that movie. No. But Heath was. And David Krumholtz.
Did you guys burn?
And, oh, man. There's some stories. I can share those stories now because we did a 15-year reunion and we got a few of the cast members together and they opened up about those stories.
Good.
And I was like,
good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems like, I mean, you're up in a place like Washington State where, I mean, now it's legal, but it was pretty much, I mean, just so accepted then. And also, like, at that age, like, you guys were how old when you were doing that one?
18, 19.
Yeah, what
19.
A dope time to be doing that movie, right?
It was really
insane. And
there was
a
5 mile drive they have there. There was a road, and you could kind of go through the mount, like through the mount by the lake and up through the mountain. So we did that a couple times. That was really, really sweet with Heath, and he had an old Volvo. And then Trevor was his best friend. And
yeah,
so would all,
I just watched that documentary.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
So
have you seen it?
Yeah, absolutely. I went to the LA premiere.
Wow.
They actually shot at the temple that I'll talk a little bit more about, Full Circle. But so Naomi Watts came in, and they actually used the venue for her to come in and do her interview for that. So
no kidding.
I was like, oh,
that looked dope. Yeah. What I mean, that experience was just, I mean, was it as fun as it looked and how the movie?
It's one of those memories that was so, you know, you didn't know at the time, but looking back, I just wish I could remember more.
Sure.
If you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
But what I do remember and what we did, you know, capture in the film is magic. And I think that's what came across. I mean, it was a great script. Obviously, Gil did an amazing job directing. The casting, you just...
Unreal casting, so many people in that movie that went on to do, like, so many things. Like, so between much. Julia Stiles, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who had had some success, but then that kind of brought him back in the limelight. It was...
I mean, really, Joseph was the only one with... A significant, you know, resume. I had done some things as well.
Yeah, and so everyone was recognizable.
But it was Julia Stiles and Heath's basically their first films. I mean,
holy shit!
Julia Stiles had done I think it was a film that was at Sundance the year before, but she hadn't done. That was her first, you know, studio film. And then Heath, the same thing. Heath literally flew in from Australia. He had done nothing in the States. He had done things in Australia, but that was his first film.
That's crazy.
So for them to cast the leads that were
two relatively unknowns
in a Disney film was unheard of. And even through the auditioning process, it was like a little bit of a struggle the way that they were able to cast it, because Gil really held the line on that. And the studios, of course, wanted, you know, I don't want to drop names, but like, and I can't remember either.
Kirk Cameron.
It was
Jonathan Taylor Thomas. I don't know.
Something. Jonathan Brandis, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was the...
From the hit movie Sidekicks.
And from, what was it, Dolphin? Dolphin?
Something?
Sequest. That's what
And Ladybugs with Dangerfield.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So that was what was going to likely be the casting, and I think Gil really pushed for
that, Heath. That is a rarity, right? To fight a studio like that for an unknown and get them to...
And look who... I mean, look what... How good of a decision that was. I mean, I can't... Again, nothing done differently. We would never obviously know what the course would be, but I think it just worked out really well. And yeah, the memories and the relationships with everybody, we had a really, really great time.
It seemed like you all just were super
everybody
chummy.
Everybody got along. Everyone was cool. There was no drama. I mean, Julia Stiles was 17. I think she still had... I think she had a teacher... At one point, I think it was, I don't know, it was like, everybody was very young.
What, was there any, was Heath like, I mean, having it be his first, like, big thing, was he, like, very much like, yo, like, can you guys, like, give me some tips, or were you, like...
No, he was...
A pro.
I mean, you saw the film. Yeah. He knew what he was doing. That's one thing about Heath, he was way beyond his time.
Do you feel like it captured him pretty well, that documentary?
Yeah. I think that was, in a way, one of the films authentically Heath and not necessarily a character. I mean... Mm-hmm. It's a character, but I'm just saying there was a lot of Heath in that, in I forget his character's name, but in 10 Things. So
Australian hunk number one.
Right. Definitely. Patrick Verona.
Yeah.
And I remember too reading the script wanting to play that role.
Of course.
You know? And I was like, sure. Man, okay, yeah. I'll play the douchebag.
Yeah.
Fine.
Play the villain.
Again,
no. I read in doing research for our podcast, there was a fun fact on the movie that I read on IMDb, and I want to know if this is true. It said that you did not know how to draw genitals, and David Krumholtz had to teach you how to draw a dick.
The one that I ended up writing or drawing on his face. Yes. I mean, who knows how to... knows how to draw... I had never had the need to learn how to draw genitals, let alone on someone's face. So fortunately, David was there, and he had a lot of experience. He's that kind of artist.
You had to go to the bullpen to get Krumholtz.
Like, how does that conversation happen? Does like the director announce it? Does anyone know how to draw a dick?
Yeah.
And then David's like, oh, I got you, buddy.
He's like, right,
hold
here.
My beer. Yep.
So I learned that from David, and I love David. He's
the greatest, huh?
Just a great guy. So funny. I mean, back then, I remember being in a hotel room and just in stitches. He was just hysterical.
I feel like that was a time, and maybe it's just because that was right at my age group, but I don't feel like there's a lot of like teen comedies anymore. That kind of thing that are like...
Well, that are cast that well and written that well. Like, that wasn't talking down to anybody. It was like, I don't know, it captured the essence of like that time so well, and everyone could relate to like a character, and like it just, I don't know, man. And it was, the comedy too was so strong. It's like sometimes you see things like a little too, I don't know, watered down or sugared up.
Just like too much sex in it, or just too many dick jokes. And that was just a pure good movie.
A couple of years ago, the Street Food Cinema folks, they did a Outdoor in the Park screening of it.
Yes.
I hadn't seen it in probably just years. Like, it's literally probably since almost when it came out. Sat through the whole film.
Yeah.
And because why would you? That'd be really weird if I was at home. And I just watched 10 Things tonight by myself.
Trying to see if that extra really fist pumped a little too hard, like the director said.
I am looking. Next time I'm watching, I'm going to be looking for you.
Yeah, dude.
And but I watched the whole film, and it was really interesting the way that Gil directed the film, and these little nuances, little nuggets, that little looks that he kept finding throughout the film that were hysterical. And I really, at that point, appreciated the film, because I do remember the very first time I saw it, it wasn't quite done, and I was, you know, such the film buff and
sure
film critic, I didn't really like it the first time. That's I
was interesting.
It just took time, but it had a just a wonderful balance in seeing it years later of, like you said, comedy. It wasn't too cheesy. It wasn't too much sex. It wasn't too much of anything.
Yeah.
It was just spot on. Awesome. I can't think of a good film, a teen film of recent times.
Yeah, Superbad, maybe, right?
Now, that was great.
Yeah, that was pretty.
So, yeah, there are. But that's also...
But that was years ago still. I mean,
that was years ago. And that
I think Seth Rogen just posted that it was 10 years ago or 15 years ago.
There you go.
It's nuts.
Well, we're going on, I think, 18 years.
Yeah, okay, so not 15 then.
Was there a scene or a moment that was particularly like just like the most fun? I'm always curious, like, throughout the whole movie, because the whole thing seems like it was a blast, but like, was there one scene you did, or like those big party scenes, are those fun, or is it because you're around so many people, or in between takes do you try to like chum it up with people, or are you just like...
Well, the party scene, and this is a sidestep, I'll answer the question on
okay.
The most fun moment, well, not, I don't even know if it was the most fun moment, but just a moment that pops in my head, we were talking about earlier,
yeah,
was the fight scene, because I don't know if you noticed, but one time she popped me.
I fucking remember that,
okay,
dude.
Okay, good. She popped me.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a fun thing, but it was like, oh!
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's where the reaction...
The take
that
they use.
The take that they use.
Well, it's authentic.
You know?
That's
you
so
know.
Crazy. Yeah, that I do remember that.
The other fun scenes, of course, with Heath on the grassy field, you know, working with him and having that, you know, encapsulated.
Yeah. Both words.
There's a different word.
No,
for
both
that,
words.
Though.
They mean the same thing. Yeah.
There's a better word, and it's not coming to me. I should eat some gummy bears.
Yeah.
Not those.
Not those ones.
Yeah. No. I mean, real weird conversation.
Only
right?
Eat the head. Just the head. Nothing else.
I got it. And then the second part of your question, or the second, what the heck were we talking?
Was about just like in a big party scene. Like, do you try to mix it up with
The party scenes were fun. It was, they're very complicated though. Remember, there's things happening, people kissing over here. So
yeah.
And you know, it's kind of that awkward thing where they play the beat behind and you're supposed to...
Yep.
Then there's no sound, but you're kind of moving.
Right.
That's a little secret,
yeah,
trade secret. There's no music when people are dancing in the scene.
So
ever.
If they look like they're dancing horribly, there's a reason for that.
It's almost like Jurassic Park. Chris Pratt has to pretend he's running alongside a Velociraptor. You're jamming out to Puff Diddy. Uh-huh. And guess what?
That's Puff not Diddy?
What did I just say?
You said Puff Diddy.
Yeah.
That's combining the two names.
No, that's P. Diddy's brother, who never made it.
Oh, okay. Puff
but
Diddy.
He did put out an album.
Oh, okay.
No, you caught me.
Deep cuts.
Puff Diddy. Jesus Christ. Did I just...
You did say that.
Dude, I think I'm ready. Dude, get me a family van and some penny loafers. I'm ready to be a dad.
Hey, we can talk about that, too.
Yeah.
You know what, though? Sometimes I create artists in my head, and I'm like, you know what? Puff Diddy should have been the guy. P. Diddy, nobody can relate to that. Puff Diddy?
Puff Diddy. It's all about it.
Diddy-dum.
How was, could you tell acting with Heath? Were you just like, oh yeah, there's a, like, you know, superstar in the making?
I think with Heath, it was always being around something special. He just had that aura, if you will.
Yeah.
And that wisdom of sort. I mean, we were the same age, but you could turn to him and be like, well, you know, what should I do about this? Or it was a very deep kind of a connection with him. And I think, you know, certainly for his close friends, we all felt that way. As far as the scenes were concerned, it just felt good. It felt easy. It felt like you were just working with a pro, and it never crossed my mind that, you know, or any expectation of where we were all on the up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We were all kind of,
in
time, you realized how talented he was.
What's the process like that for people that are at that, like, you're similar age and similar, like, I mean, you had, you know, more experience, but like, are you guys, do you try to, like, how many times do you run a scene, or does one of you guys?
We would do that the nights before
in
the hotel rooms, and that was kind of a thing.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, let's go run lines tonight. So we all took that part of it, you know, seriously.
Yeah,
because a lot of your first movies, you want to be professional.
Yeah. And everybody, we enjoyed, you know, being professionals and showing up and kind of holding ourselves to that standard. So everybody, there was no slacks on the job.
Yeah.
And I had dealt with some things like that before. There's definitely people along the way, actors that just didn't.
Well,
just
let's jam you up.
They have
let's talk about your stints on Full House, Step by Step. Boy Meets World, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, Party of Five, the Seventh. You owned TGIF.
TGIF was my shit.
They should have, they should have changed it to TGIAK. Thank God it's Andrew Keegan. Dude, that's crazy.
I had a nice run on a few shows along the way. Obviously, Seventh Heaven was the one that was the longest.
Yeah.
Wilson West, you said you were watching episodes last night, late last night. Is there any?
We don't need to talk about how late it was or how early it was.
That's not even because you were coming on the show. That's just his thing.
Oh, okay.
So it's my go-to show.
Yeah,
but you were telling me when we were walking up that he does it all. It's like a thing. It's like
all the time.
Jesus, man.
You know, it's all good.
I'm gonna go
not for Jessica Biel.
You know what? Don't make me end this podcast early and put on Puff Diddy because
we should just jam out to Puff Diddy, change the words, and have a go at it. So. All those shows, great experiences, bouncing around, getting to do.
And you really, I mean, this is difficult for me to say this, but my sister had many posters of you on her wall. This conversation is making her extremely jealous. I've already talked to her about it. She hates my guts now. Anyway.
Where is she?
She is at work right now. She's an accountant. So, and then I'm talking to her childhood crush. So, yeah.
What's her name?
Her name is Katie.
Hi, Katie.
Can we call her?
Let's try.
Get on the phone.
Let's break up her day.
Yeah.
Katie's day is accounting. It's numbers. I'm sure she'd really appreciate a little moment, a little break.
Yeah, dude.
So I'm sure. I will try. She almost never answers the phone, but we will give it a damn
let's
shot.
See, let's
yeah,
see.
I should say this just to attest to how.
Married with kids, back off.
Hey, dude, for how dope of a dude you are, I mean, look, we had one conversation before we set this up, and you made a video for my sister's birthday.
Oh, dude, that's right.
Game changer, dude.
That's right.
If anybody needs any more proof that you're a great dude, that was a big time move, man.
Thank you.
Katie, answer your damn phone. I mean, she's gonna be so upset if she doesn't pick up.
Be like, you know. Right.
Well, you're gonna leave a message.
We're gonna leave a message.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you text her and then say like, "Yo, pick up"?
I can, but she's like,
I guess it would be cool. Up.
At the tone, please record your message.
All right, here
we
go. Yeah, he should hold it.
Hey, Katie, this is Andrew Keegan. I'm here doing the About Last Night podcast, and I heard that we were supposed to talk today. You were supposed to be here, so I'm a little confused that you're not here, and it's mostly the reason that I came, not for these two ding-dongs. But in any case, give me a call back. I'll text you the number.
Yeah.
Hope you have a great day.
Oh, my God.
All right.
Yes.
Dude.
Left her a message.
I mean, I'm the greatest brother ever, or the worst, depending on your point of view.
The greatest. Dude, that's amazing.
But, like, you had to have so, like, because you were one of those, like, Joey Lawrence, Jonathan Taylor Thomas. Like, you probably had some crazy stories.
It was an interesting time. I mean, certainly malls and airports were not something that were an enjoyable experience.
Explain the mall chaos to me, because I've only seen videos or been to a couple malls myself as a kid and seen that hysteria, and it seems like...
Well, the one that topped it off, speaking of Joey Lawrence, was actually doing a mall appearance. So at that time, they would pay you. I think it was like... $15,000 to fly you across. I mean, this particular one, and I think the year before Joey Lawrence was there, and it was Roanoke, Virginia, and it was like a bajillion. Just I literally looked like they were hanging off the edges of this, you know, open air mall.
Yeah,
and so walking in there was just like a cacophony of screaming that I don't know what that pitch is, but it's quite frightening because it's just like. Unadulterated hysteria at that point. And so I sat there and did, you know, hours of signatures.
Dope.
And what was funny about that, though, is that there was a group of guys that opened up the event. They were
a musical group.
A boy band.
Yeah.
You may have heard of them, Backstreet Boys.
Those idiots.
So yeah. So the funny thing is, at that
I thought
time,
you were going to say Evan and Jaren. Remember
this
them?
Was even,
yeah.
Well, this
yeah,
was
yeah,
even
yeah.
Before.
This before. Is when,
yeah. Okay.
They were still
that's
psychos.
Right. That's right.
And the thing was that nobody knew who they were.
They were like, "Hurry up! We don't care. Bring on the keys."
That was the thing. They were playing when I came out, and that hysteria happened. It was just before their time. Of course, later on, that was exactly what they were.
Isn't that crazy?
I met them in the back, and the whole bus, and it was like one of those moments where, you know, it was like the we're, you know, meeting you, and of course years later, you know, I can't even get a ticket to
it. Oh no.
Come on, Brian Littrell, lead singer. Why do I know that? Come on.
Yeah. Why can't I get it? AJ, what's going on, man? Just let me in. In the band.
Dude,
I want to be
that's
in the band.
A great documentary. You going around the country getting denied, trying to get into a concert, and then like finally at the end they let you in and bring you on stage. Like that could be a great mockumentary. That's a great mockumentary.
I want to see that happen.
What do they give you? I mean, do you go with a obviously a publicist, right, and a crew, or is it they just kind of like, yo man, good luck, sign those titties and then get out alive if you can.
if you can make it. Yeah. No, it was four, getting in and out was four security guards, and I remember like going through the crowd and like, you know, girls like doing the whole reaching
trying
and grabbing.
To grab hair and stuff.
Yeah, it was and I don't think it happens like that as much. Maybe Justin Bieber, obviously.
Maybe, yeah.
And I don't know if it is that way anymore with social media the way that it is.
No.
Because everybody kind of knows everybody, and I don't think there's, I mean.
And you can,
also they didn't have.
You could reach out and like.
Yeah, tweet some, them.
Yeah, and then they may respond or favorite tweet.
And I'm getting old.
Tweet it, Puff Diddy.
I was like, I don't do that. And I think I said.
You don't do
it.
Any social media.
I do social media. Yeah. Facebook. Yeah, yeah. And I have the Twitter account. I just something. And I was thinking about this the other day. You're going through Venice and you see people, you know, holding up their selfies and everything. And it's just the weirdest thing. And I don't want to be. And I get it. It's great to look at yourself, you know, but I come up and send it to all your friends, but it still just doesn't settle with me. And it kind of puts me a little off. Like, I get it, but it's, we were joking earlier about the sort of narcissism of, but our culture is in these next generations, and we're in a weird between, like, we get it, but we're already becoming a little, you know, too old for it. Like,
yeah,
it's,
right.
It's an odd thing. Like, let me send my friends and I'm sitting at a cafe. It's like,
yeah,
who cares, but okay.
Dude, you know? There's a good girlfriend from college who posts these things. Like, I almost follow her stories to, it's almost like a guilty love, pleasure, hate. A love hate, where like, I get so angry you. Where it's like, she'll literally do videos like, she'll be like lying in bed and she'll be like, do a boomerang of like a face of like some like weird goofy face, and then it'll be like looking up classes like that's the tagline, and I literally go see it and I'm like, no, you're not looking up classes like anything, you're boomeranging your face and it's annoying.
Well, the thing is, the trends now, the Musical.ly and all of this is they're doing these other social media things that I don't understand.
Sure.
But they're lip syncing and they're getting millions of hits and people are like,
oh, there's cities we'll go to and do a weekend of shows, and literally like the weekend before they'll be like, yeah, fucking, you know, Puff Diddy's, you know, younger son, you know, Diddy Puff was here doing a whole weekend where he just like would lip sync songs and do a Q&A for a half hour and get paid way more and sell it out
way more than us.
They're doing lip syncing concerts. Like, what is that?
I know, dude.
What is that?
Know.
And like, I guess it is, we are in this day and age of like, there's so much content to be. Is the weird Russian guy swimming in the pool?
Yeah, no, there's pool people out there.
Yeah, there's
pool.
Yeah.
I saw the pool people.
Yeah.
Dude, pool people here.
I do have pool people. And there is a, more famously, that's why there's like a 90-year-old Russian man that before I had a parking spot, I would have to go out and move my car every morning. I would see him out there. And I was just like, dude, like, we get it, man. You're killing the game. You know what I'm saying? But like, you're making us all feel bad by doing laps at 6 a.m. But like, my kitchen window looks right out onto the pool. So I remember the first time I like was in there like washing dishes and I look out the window and I just like felt like that scene in any sort of creepy movie where you're just like looking out the window at the pool. And I was like watching the people swim and have a good time. But then I was like, if they looked up and just saw me like washing
scrubbing a dish and staring
also
at
like the dishes, my hand was definitely like lower. Like it wasn't in window view. So it's like,
that's,
you know,
not good.
Yeah. Like washing a spatula or, you know, fill in the blank, you know, if we're playing Mad Libs, you know. So anyway, do you love Venice, or do you, when you come to this side of town, are you like, oh man, I miss the Hollywood life?
It's interesting because it's rare, I'll be honest with you. So I'm kind of doing the rounds through the neighborhood, kind of remembering like, oh, this is where I used to, where I crashed the Ferrari, or
oh shit,
this is where, you know. So I had some interesting times in this neighborhood.
I just want to be able to say that sentence one day.
Oh, that's,
I want to be able to say, like, I crashed.
When did you have a Ferrari?
That was name drop. Like, that's exactly. I was just dropping that.
When did you have a Ferrari?
Of course, then you got to ask me that question.
Yeah, exactly.
See how that works? So, yeah.
Is that Camp Nowhere money? What got you a Ferrari?
No. This was 2000, but I was dating, I don't know, this little other trivia,
yeah,
a few years, was dating a country singer.
Ooh.
And so she had money.
Yeah.
So she got a Ferrari that I got to drive. It was great.
Oh my God.
It was a great time until I crashed it and I realized I probably probably should put that car in the
what
garage.
What is that feeling like, crashing a Ferrari? Is
like, it probably just... crashing anything. It's yeah. frightening. Yeah. But when you realize that the bill to fix it's like 30 grand, then you're like, oh, yeah, that's...
And then it's not even yours.
But yeah, that was an embarrassing moment.
What a cool least. Car to drive, though, man. That's like...
Great car.
I mean...
Great car.
Yeah.
But too much for, you know, yeah. obviously.
Well, yeah, that and I always laugh at the people that own like Lamborghinis out here because it's L.A. and those things are meant to be like open road, and then they're just sitting in traffic. Yeah, with
it's
that on.
Kind of embarrassing, to be honest with you. Like, I'm yeah. glad I got that out of my way at yeah, 20. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And now, well, and that's when you're supposed to do it. I feel when you're the 38-year-old, 42-year-old, or like it's either early 20s or 60 and above. That's when you should have a Ferrari.
Well, now I associate it being in Venice with the tech, you know, industry. So right. you got these, you know, 20-something, 30-something. In Venice, it just doesn't fit. It's like Venice, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, it's
like,
Venice.
You know, there's
get on
like,
your bike, man.
No, that is.
Exactly. People are on bikes and people are, you know. This is crazy.
Yeah, dude. You mentioned to me earlier, too, about the eclipse. Is that something you're genuinely pumped on?
So that's something that's interesting that, you know, in that the last 3 years I've been very involved in developing and being the founder of Full Circle.
Yeah, yeah. You started, is it a church? Is it a religion? Is it a lifestyle?
So by definition, you know, it's defined as a church, but mm-hmm. a lot of that is to do with, and genuinely we have organized in that way to be in that space. But that space that we were in, the temple, was a church. And so, mm-hmm. and also, you know, over the years being in Venice, there's such a spiritual, or it is a spiritual kind of epicenter.
And you just get that vibe walking around Venice.
Yeah, and so
you really
to be the home, you know, in this temple, that was the design of it. And it was, in a lot of ways, I consider it a spiritual startup. We were a special event space for people that were doing meditation, sound healings, yoga, different kinds of workshops, music events, and it was all curated.
All the stereotypes that people assume with Los Angeles.
Yeah, but to be in that particular, you know, the heart of Venice. We were across yeah. the street from Google.
Wow.
You were right by Gold's Gym too,
by
right?
Gold's Gym.
Yeah. I mean,
just an epic location. And so it was an amazing 3 years. We did almost 1,000 events.
Holy
and
shit.
Within those events, as I was driving over, of course, today, the significance, sure. a lot of the team and a lot of the community, you know, involved in meditations and different, mm-hmm. You know, philosophies around, you know, the astrology of what's going on today and the significance of it. And not that I can recite a lot of it, but it's an important moment to reflect, and there's significance in everything. And, you know, often we default to the entertainment industry and stories, but really life is one grand experience. And the universe is—it's almost the greatest, you know, theme of life is looking to the stars and seeing, you know, a lot of stories were created from astrology. So, but it's, on a personal level, just like I was saying, a time to reflect and really a lot going on in the world, and it's really important yeah. stuff that's happening. And you know, everybody's talking about racism and all these different, you know, issues that are going on. But it's so important that we take the time to be loving people, and some people shluff it off like, yeah, but it is important. It is yep, important yep. that we reflect on how are we being in the world. And if you really take that initiative to take care of oneself, self-love, and, you know, moments like this to reflect, we all need to be better humans. That's really what's going to change yeah. the world.
And I'll say this is that, is the things that you, I watched a couple of, news reports on your church. And
yeah, they did a yeah. really great piece on ABC News.
Nightline.
Yeah, dude, that was incredible.
And from the outside view, yeah, it may seem a little hippy dippy and a little crazy like that. Which, by the way, you have a good sense of humor about because you sort of parodied yourself on the TV show Hollywood Darlings.
Yeah,
where you essentially played yourself at the church.
Up. Yeah, hyped
yeah.
up.
And so, but I want to stress that these are people that just. Preach love and peace and acceptance. So it's like, I don't care how you get that message, as long as you get that message. It's fine. Whether you get it through Buddhism or YouTube stars or going to your church. Whatever it takes to get people to be like, oh, I should just be kind to other people and sort of follow the golden rule. That's fine by me.
Yeah.
Just get that message. It's cool.
I was actually driving over and had an interesting you know, train of thinking and thoughts about how much flack we did get. I mean, mm-hmm. it came out in a Vice article, and they really ran with...
Well, because they ran with the cult. Yeah.
And you get it. But at the time, you know, you're doing something, and it's a really hard work, and you're authentically doing it. You feel driven to do it, passion to do it. And there's this joke, you know, a way that they sort of told the story, which, again, that's what publications do. And then, you know, you see all of the incredibly vitriol types of comments. And, you know, now, years later, you know, you kind of look back and you think, how did we end up in this overall situation? And the people that are living with that kind of angst and fear and anger, it's and now we're seeing it really come out. And I think full circle in this experience is really an expression of what is possible. We created a lot of amazing experiences. I get messages every day from people just, you know, on a different, you know, life trajectory based on one of the experiences that they've had. Oh yeah. I mean, people have created life paths and are doing what they're passionate about doing because of some one of the experiences that we've had there, or one relationship with somebody that connected there. I mean, I'm seeing that often now after 3 years of doing it. So that just tickles me. It's just like a really sweet feeling to know that people are happier, more loving, and doing better things in the world.
Well, life can get so like fast paced, and like now, like there are just so many distractions, and I feel like it's easier said than done to like step back and go out of your way to put yourself in a position to like get a second set of eyes and ears on like your own life and like being. I don't know what I mean. Maybe you can break down what some of these events are like that help people change their direction.
First one that pops into mind is Mark Shapiro's authenticity workshop. So he started, and I think he did 3 or 4 of them, and it was a really, he put a lot of time into it. And I think he worked at one of the cable networks, I think HBO at one point, and transitioned from a corporate job.
Yeah.
And said this is, and he does a podcast, and I did his podcast.
Oh, dope.
The only the one and only podcast, nice. Mark mm-hmm. Shapiro, and nice. I was on that one. So if you want to listen to another podcast, because this isn't enough, then you can listen to that one, and I talk a lot
for
about...
For more Keegan content.
Exactly. Yeah. let me list off all the podcasts.
We love that. For it. It's fine.
And another person that'll actually blow your mind, which will bring this full circle story to you, is Kyle Cease.
Yeah, Kyle Cease.
Yes.
Kyle
Seattle comedian.
Seattle comedian. Also 10 things I hate about you.
By the way, wrote that credit to the... Like, dude, that...
Yes.
This is another, like, I mean, how iconic that movie is. Like, you know, like, when you're first starting out, like, we grab a hold of any little, like, man, I guess started on According to Jim once. I wrote that credit for, like, fucking 5 years when I would come up to stage. I was like, from According to Jim. Everyone's like, dude, it's not even on the air anymore. I was like, but I was on it. So it's like, Cease, like, but that was such a, like, big moment in that movie, right? Or at least, like.
Pogi Lowenstein.
Yes, dude.
And so he came through the temple as well.
Wow.
And he was doing his retreats two, 3 days.
Yep.
And he was 100, he'd fill it up, 175 people. But now he's doing 1,400 people. He wrote a book. He just had a baby. Yeah,
he's very into motivational speaking. Basically, like, he's like comedy to motivational speaker, and now kind of
how
like
similar
sort
is
of
it?
Hybrid of both of them.
Exactly. He takes comedy and helps people crack open what their real passions are. He's kind of a Tony Robbins, if you will, with a comedic and entertainment background.
That's so awesome.
That's another incredible story where he came and did at least 2 or 3 or maybe even 4 events at Full Circle, right? Mm-hmm. So he was in that, you know, beginning phase, and he's blown up.
I mean, how does that make you feel to like know that you got, I mean,
just, you know,
you were part of something that helped somebody lead to something else.
We did and this was something we could probably look up too. We did a 10 things sort of spoof video at one point before he was doing what he's doing with the book and the speaking. And so I was always, I loved Kyle. He was always just such a awesome
good
guy.
Energy. Yeah.
And it's you know, and again, we were just in a supportive, you know, housing and curating position. I mean, he's doing his thing, and we were, you know, the special event space that he was doing it at. But he also did another event with us for Ultimed, which I was a spokesperson for. It's a healthcare provider here in LA. And so he came and did, we did a retreat, set up a retreat for them. So, you know, we had a really interesting time doing such a dynamic, you know, co-creative is really the basis of all that we do there.
Yeah.
The co-creative model and the co-creative handbook is written by a couple dear friends, our elders, Papa Makash and Mama Cat in Hummingbird, New Mexico.
What did you call me?
What? Exactly. Papa Makasha.
Wow.
Okay.
Really cool.
Sounds like a very good Jewish dish. Oh, come over. Mom's going to make some Papa Makasha.
It might be an Indian dish.
Or that.
Whatever. But anyway, so, you know, it's been a really deep dive into so many things for 3 years, not only for myself, for everybody on the team.
Brad and I want to come sometime. Yeah. Is that like, is there like an open door policy? Do we have to sign up? Or?
So this, at the moment, we're on hiatus.
Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm. Our property was put up for sale, and it was a part of the experience throughout. It was very difficult to get the doors open. So we just got to a point where...
Well, sure, it's right in the heart of Venice, like you said. That's not cheap.
And so hopefully we're actually speaking of everything that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
There's a local temple, Mishkan, and so we've been talking to them about doing some programming at that temple.
Awesome.
So, working with Rabbi Gabriel over there.
To try to get, have a home base.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, did you find that some people would show up because they heard that you were involved with it and they just either wanted to meet you or whatever, and then they sit down, they experience a service and they go, oh, this is actually kind of cool.
You know, I think at the beginning there was a very unknown, curious, and there's a few kinds of those experiences, but mostly people didn't even know. That was actually what blew my mind. People just didn't know at all, like what I did. They just, I mean, other than coming, they'd heard about it, word of mouth. So it wasn't really based off of that, although, you know, I do know plenty of stories where people sort of like, what the hell is this? Let me go check it out. And then they leave. Yeah. Like, that was amazing. And they're meeting people.
Wilson's doing a drum circle.
Exactly. You're like,
dude, if that's what you need to think to get into the building, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that was a blessing and a curse both. You know, you saw the article, you know, that Weiss did and other kinds of articles and perspectives on it. We changed the narrative on that. But it was also what got people's attention. So you kind of have to take it.
Well, anytime you hear like... Yeah. Celebrity and new religion, of course, like there's certain things that pop up into your head, whether it be like Scientology or other things.
The Source, have you ever seen the documentary The Source? I mean, I get it. I saw I really enjoy those documentaries because you just realize exactly what people were thinking, like, oh no, this is gonna be crazy.
Yeah.
Are you a big documentary guy?
I love documentaries than you know, more than I think even.
Oh yeah, because you.
Me too, man.
You really learned something from them.
What have you? What have
lately?
You, yeah.
The well, of course,
and also like your top. I want to know, like, just, you know,
Making of the Murderer was a good one.
Oh yeah.
What was the other one that they just not the Faith? It was about the Boston clergy. It was the crazy story.
Oh, was that
the Faith or something? The Keepers. That was that was a good one.
Have you seen King of Kong?
No. Oh, no, I know about that one. I've never seen that.
Dude, put it in your queue.
Really? All right.
It's the story of Puff Diddy. No. It's basically about the guy who, you know, has the Donkey Kong record. And it opens up by highlighting and profiling, like, the whole arcade game underworld and, like, the culture of it and where it started in, I think, somewhere, a small town in Ohio. So it gives you all that. And then it just takes you to present day where it's, like, this guy named Billy Mitchell, who seems like a fucking character. Like, goatee, long black hair, almost like the villain of the story. And then this guy in Redmond, Washington, father of two, challenges his record, and that's all I'll say. But dude, it's one of the most, it's heartbreaking, it's hilarious, it's like,
and it's so strange because when you think about that topic, what you just described, you're like, what would I watch a movie about that? But documentaries just have this way of making you care about things. It's like, fuck, shut down SeaWorld. I didn't know about this like a month ago, but I'm all about it now.
Well, and this is what's wonderful about what you guys are doing even here today is you're opening up and creating a space for people to have a conversation and, you know, tell stories and help, you know, help move agendas along. But I do, you know, want to also acknowledge a lot of the, you know, the nonprofit work that we did with the space. One of the highlights was the Sea Shepherd Foundation, and that was another wild story. The night that we got the kombucha raid.
Yeah.
So that was on a Sea Shepherd
the
Foundation.
The FBI raided you.
The ABC.
ABC raided you. The network?
No. Alcohol beverage.
Get back on Step by Step.
Okay.
It's interestingly enough, something I can't talk too much about.
Okay, yeah, sure.
There is two open litigations based on that experience.
Got it. All right, we don't want to get you in trouble.
Not bad. You know, what I can say, though, is that the media in that situation took and ran with the headline, which one? Andrew Keegan arrested for selling illegal substance.
Jeez, that's so, like, that could be anything.
Dude, that sounds really...
That could be underage porn. Terrible. That could be, like,
So they ran with a couple different publications, and it was a fact pattern that was just so egregious that we decided to stand for ourselves, which, again, I think is a big part of what has and had been happening at Full Circle. I mean, we were very involved in Standing Rock, for example, did mm-hmm. a lot of different events, and a lot of people were going back and forth. And so, you know, that's where the times we're in now. People have to stand up for what they believe in. They have to stand up for something, you know.
Yeah.
That's what we're being called to do. And it's incredible, actually, now to be hearing it so much since the Charleston thing.
Oh, yeah.
All the pundits talking about it. I'm like, wow, this is what we've been doing for 3-4 years, yeah, 5 years. I mean, I was on the streets during Occupy. I mean, we were out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of bugged me out. Like, we were out there peacefully standing up for what we believed in during the Occupy movement, and they came out with batons and everything. You're a white guy in Charleston with bats, yeah, and shields and helmets, yeah, and they're just like, yeah, I think it's going to be all right. Yeah, yeah. We're going to stand down right now. There's something about that that's fishy.
Some guy waving a Nazi flag and an AR-15. You're like, well, he's going
to
be okay.
He should be fine. He can take care of himself. Yeah. Why do we need to get involved?
And then you have like drum circles and guitar things and hacky set going on with
and
some of the Occupy
movements.
And
rubber bullets. No, yeah, no, not even Occupy. Think about Standing Rock. They sick dogs on them. I mean, so there's a lot of things that, and again, we're going back to this eclipse, the sort of shadow of our culture, and the light is being put on it, you know, and mm-hmm. we need to cleanse these things. But it's, again, so important for us to recognize that within ourselves.
Have you always had this just like warm and generous and giving back and helping people like mentality, and was or like what was going on in your life that created you wanting to have this I don't know, extra purpose and create Full Circle?
There was a couple things, and again, you know, everybody in their 20s and 30s at times feels a little like, am I doing what I should be doing with my life?
Oh, it's the decade of uncertainty, man.
You know, yeah. So I went through that, and I worked, and I went to auditions, and I didn't work, and I didn't work, and I didn't work. And it was like, ah, man, and there was things that I didn't want to do. And so you kind of end up in this whirl of like, what am I doing with my life? I had a couple different, you know, frustrating experiences and altercations, and ended up in like very... fights. And okay. Not always that, you know, I can look back, I could have done things differently and avoided it. So those experiences, one actually, believe it or not, was with the police when I got we did an event down in Venice, and it was, you know, longer story, but we had hired off-duty sheriffs and LAPD, and they didn't get along. And anyway, I ended up in handcuffs in this
shit.
Another crazy one of my life experiences. And I'm thinking to myself, between that and another altercation I had on the street, I was like, "What's going on in this community?" I'm like, "What? What?" That fired me up, and that's when I read the Co-Creator's Handbook, which is the book I was mentioning earlier. One of my dear friends sat me down and said, "Andrew, you have a knack," because I was at the time, I was bringing people together, doing music events.
Yeah.
She's like, you can build community. You can bring people together. And so I took the book, read the book, and was like, all right, well, now I need a place. The place became available, and all the things lined up. I mean, we use the word synchronicity, but sometimes you just kind of take one step to the next step, and you don't even know where you're going, and it's laying itself out. And it's in a way what transpired. And I, you know, I'm just like anybody. I care about the world, and I want things to be better, and I don't, you know, but I'm also needing to grow as for myself.
Yeah.
You know, I talk about self-love. I need to have, this is the experience that is calling me. And so that's sort of a very overview of all that was going on in my life. And, you know, once I got into Full Circle, oh my goodness, it was and is one of the most incredibly difficult things I've ever done. I mean, to deal
really?
With so many people, to deal with building a business from scratch. I mean, it was,
yeah,
wild. I mean, one day I'll tell you about the guy who came in, took his clothes off. Another guy came in with a knife. I mean,
Jesus,
some wild things.
People just trying to get in the way that weren't.
No. These are just, you're in the middle of Venice, and like crazy experiences happen when you just have an open door, you know?
Yeah.
But so many of the beautiful things way overrode those.
Oh, good.
And it was and those things happened in a beautiful way too. You just had to find the peace within yourself to take care of. I mean, I was taking care of so much, and that's what I feel like was the true value of that experience, really growing, knowing you can do anything.
It's a great metaphor for life, quite honestly, like having that open door policy, like not only just for a business, but for yourself. It's like you invite people in that might, like, you know, get a little drunk and, like, you know, jerk off in your kitchen, and then, like, you know, you might get somebody that's like, dude, thank you for the party. Like,
wait,
I met the love of my life.
Second, I knew I recognized
you.
You
know what, dude? I had a beard. No, that was not me.
You can admit it now. Yeah. Now,
all right,
now
look,
we know who it was. Oh, look, such a mystery.
And I sold that towel on eBay. No.
I do want to ask you, because, I mean, like, you hear so many stories and so many sort of when people get too famous too young, they kind of have this certain they go through certain struggles, and you seem to have avoided those. How did you avoid those kinds of things?
I mean, I think that each person, what I think fame does is it can accelerate that, but I do think that people either have a good, you know, sort of core or stability in life or not. So it may just be a way that things come up earlier. Look, I can't speak to anybody else's experience. I've obviously seen some things along the way.
Sure.
I think of a dear friend who is an amazing, amazing, super talented actor, Brad Renfro, and meeting him at 17 or 18, actually he was younger, he was like 14, and you know, immediately, like, this youngster has been through a lot in his life, and he was introduced to the industry, but you could tell he just had pushing himself, in an unhealthy direction, and there was just nothing you could do, and truthfully, he put together a beautiful body of work, and he did, you know, but there was a point, and I think he passed actually the same year as Heath passed, not too long after, because it kind of threw me off, actually right before. So I remember getting the call about Heath, and I was like, no, they must be talking about Brad
still, just happened.
I was like, in any case, you know, so I don't know that fame directly can or does or have that much of an effect. Like I said, I think for some people it can open some doors to
just and like within, access to
dark
things.
Yeah, dark sides, but truthfully, who knows to say that they wouldn't be on a crash course with this sort of life experiences. So
what do you think it is about the business that just kind of gets people, like, I mean, I don't know if you can speak to Brad and Heath specifically, but like, it's you know, on paper you look, or even just from the outside, I'm sure, and a lot of people did, that were so shocked by it, you're just like, oh, you kind of got the world by the balls, and you're like, you're killing it, and like, everyone loves being around you, and then like, these other things that are going on, it seems like a lot of the times people don't know that.
Look, I think a part of it is also just destiny.
Yeah,
we're here, and from a, you know, to try to analyze or philosophize, I can make up words too.
Yeah.
it goes back to just people being and growing and evolving as best as they can. And I think, you know, one thing that fame can do is it kind of prevents people from having access to the full life experience, because if you're famous, you're at that point, you're kind of, you got your handlers, your agents, it's all about getting the next job. You may not be living life to the fullest. And I think that's one thing that I greatly value in my evolution, is moving to Venice, opening up the space, and just being open to everybody and anybody. There's no possibility for, you know, I'm better than anyone else in this kind of experience. And so that has really given me a full experience that I'm so appreciative for. And like I said, you know, I don't think it's necessarily selfish to say that it's important to take care of yourself and to create the best human, you know, dynamic or experience you can. I think that's really goes to everything else we've talked about, standing up for things, believing in things, living life passionately, doing things that scare you, and not stupid things, but things that are meaningful and help other people at the end of the day.
Do you feel like everything you've done up until this point, like before Full Circle, kind of like, you know, everything kind of happens for a reason type thing, where it's like it all kind of led you to that? I mean, it's like,
yeah, it was very,
you could
direct.
Almost break it down, like, had you not done Seventh Heaven, you wouldn't have right? I mean, like,
yeah,
things,
but
kinda,
that's the whole point, right?
Yeah.
We can't necessarily look back and say, oh well, if I would have done American Pie, then maybe
who knows? You could have been loaded and been Ferrari. You could have driven a Ferrari to the house that I jerked off on, and I wouldn't have sold that towel, and I wouldn't have these podcast mics.
Yeah. The towel bought the mics. That's good to know.
Dude, yeah.
Yep.
I don't know if I want to talk.
Don't touch them. Yeah. There's some lice all over in the corner. You can use that if you want.
But you're right. It's like, you don't know where that could have led, right?
But,
like,
so that's why it's so important to be present in the moment, and that's where I think meditation and sound healing and all these things kind of attune people to recognizing the moment. And that's all we really have. If we're worrying about the future, or every moment has its own levels of dynamicness, and you need to be able to, you know, traverse through life. And I'm just like, you know, anybody else, like, I have my own fears or thoughts about things, but I am genuinely happy, and I think that's what's important.
Good. I don't practice meditation. I'm very curious about it, and I, like, you know, Kevin Nealon's a good buddy of ours, and he's recently got into it, and he's
Sklar's
like
too.
Sklar Brothers, and like, you know, a handful of comedians are, and you know, it's stand up and like podcasts. I try to, are definitely helping me, like, just really get more present and try to, like, step back and not think so ahead. But obviously, our business is conducive for, like, just, you know, I got this, and then I'm doing this, and like this, and like, even today we have like a couple more podcasts, and it's like, but I feel like I've gotten good at
separating everything and being like, all right, well, I'm here right now. And then, you know, I'm not going to think about what's happening next until it's time to do that. And I feel like you can do that, right? But I don't know if meditation is way to do that. Or
I think it's about practice. And sometimes I talk about life meditation. I mean, you can find a moment, meditative moment in any moment, not because again, it defeats the point. If you're like, I'm going to meditate over here to make sure that I'm good. You know, it's a process, but to have the practice of quieting the mind enough and yourself enough to just be reflective. And that's what, again, we're talking about the eclipse today. There's that quality to taking those moments and creating any practices. I mean, I've seen so many come through the temple, and of course, meditation, the practice of meditation, is really taken off in recent times because there's such a value to it. I mean, even scientifically, just for you to calm yourself is a healthy, way of practicing through life and having a practice through life.
Absolutely. Do you think weed helps that?
I just heard that they're doing infused meditations, actually. Wow. I did hear about that.
What?
Yeah, because
dude,
I guess it would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, I just got my mom, she had terrible arthritis. I just convinced her to start using, like, it's called Flexol 420. Mm-hmm. You should sponsor the podcast, by the way. but a THC cream.
So, I mean, CBD oil.
Yeah. Yeah.
We go right from weed talk to you're a dad now.
exactly.
Now, if your kid came to you and showed business and courage.
Ooh, that's a great question. I have not put a lot of thought into it, although it's been something that she's adorable. I mean, you know. And
how old is she?
17 months, almost 18 months.
Oh, congrats.
So, new dad.
Oh, my gosh. Just the most fun. She's got a little sniffle, so we kept her from school today. But I mean,
she's actually shooting a mini weeds commercial.
Yeah, so that's actually,
she's not sick. I hate to break it to you. She's trying to.
Just didn't want to admit
following
it.
Following in dad's footsteps.
Yeah, exactly. She's a legacy.
Yeah.
She's just so entertaining that I can only imagine that she would work if we were interested in that. You know, I'm not opposed. I haven't really put a lot of thought. She's 17 months old. Obviously, it's nothing.
Yeah, fucking. He's up with the Katie Couric interview, Brad. Jesus. Is she going to act? She's 17 months, man.
Does she have a personality?
She can't say the word Sharpie yet. I don't know if she's going to.
You know, when she's old enough and if it's something that she wants to do, who's to even know what the business is going to be like?
That's true.
Five
totally,
years?
Right?
Yeah, she may come to you and be like, hey, I'm just going to make.
She's probably going
to
be making her own movies at five and I'm going to the premieres. We're like, yeah, that's great.
Makeup tutorials she's on like, YouTube. You know,
Dad, you can't get in. But the Backstreet Boys, yeah, come on in. Yeah, come on into my movie premiere. That is, I hear from just so many of my buddies, like the life-changing moment of having a kid. Is it like, can you attest to that? Is it,
you know,
what's different? Who's Andrew Keegan now versus 17 months ago?
We talked about meditation a moment ago. It is a form of meditation to just be present with her because it's just nonstop. They just want to put the top. I mean, she's put the top on this bottle or taking the trash can. She's just into everything. So, you know, being aware of how much every moment to her is important and just the love. Like today, she just runs over and just grabs my leg and kisses my leg. It's just like, oh, your heart,
dude.
Just
yeah, because
Brad does that to me, and it's like doesn't have the same effect, but it is like
pretty close.
It's impressive.
Well, like, the beard tickles his knee, so it always makes him laugh.
No humping though, right?
No. Well, unless
that's extra. You got to pay for that
after a couple of whiskeys. I can't tell you
what is it. Is there? I mean, can you see like yourself?
She's spunky.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's...
You can tell that early, right?
Oh, yeah.
Personality's starting to form.
I mean, she does these little moves, and she hears music, and she'll do a little, like, crazy dance.
That's hilarious.
And you start to see their personalities, and it's interesting how fast they grow too. I mean, just so many things about it that is just it's a wonderful experience.
It's always awesome, it's always fascinating to... And then when you realize, like, oh, yeah, like, things that I'm just becoming used to... They're experiencing that for the very first time.
Yeah.
I remember my nephew, one time he was playing, and then he just got this look on his face like he was terrified. Like, just utter and complete fear. And we're all kind of looking at him like, oh, my God, what's happening? Like, why are you so scared all of a sudden? And then he farted.
He farted.
Oh, I was going to guess that. And he had never, like, really been consciously aware of his fart before. And he did. And then he just started laughing. And it's like, oh, right. You've never really farted before. And when and the first time you do that, that's hilarious.
Now like, we know why there's so many fart jokes in movies, right?
Yes.
Your first big laugh.
Yes, absolutely. We all were, then we were all cracking up, and then he's probably thinking like, wait, so all I gotta do is fart and everyone laughs at me?
Right.
Perfect. And you're like, yes, that's all you have to do, and I will laugh every time.
That's what you do have to watch, though, because anytime you give him a reaction, yeah. you know, she started picking her nose, we're like, oh no, and then she's like, looking at us like, I got it. I'm just like, oh no, don't look at her. Don't look at her.
Yeah.
We don't want her doing that in public. That's crazy.
It's like, that's.
Oh, hey, hon.
Yeah.
Over here. Divert them. Divert them.
That's how I'll get daddy's attention. Yeah, pick my nose.
Exactly. Yeah.
Will you show her? I'm sure she'll just find your work, right? At some point. Like,
I've not even thought that far ahead.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, she loves Moana right now. So she's at that level of film.
Cool.
But maybe 5, 6. I mean, when's the right time to show a kid Camp Nowhere?
Dude. I don't know, man. You're asking the wrong guy. Because I'm like, I'll still watch that high. So I mean, it's like, you're asking,
any age.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable movie. We got about 5 more minutes. Is that
great,
cool?
Great.
What in your career, like, was, I don't know, man, the most, like, where you just felt like, God, this business is awesome. It was just like a full experience from top to bottom. You know what I'm saying? Where it was fun. The cast you worked with is great. You maybe got to go to a cool location.
Got a great answer for you on that one.
It's a 9-part question. So let me finish. So what was the? No. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. I had auditioned for the filmmakers that made Stargate, and had not gotten the part that I went and auditioned for, but they really loved me, and so they said we're gonna write in another part, and they flew me out to way out in the desert. I want to say not Death Valley. They flew me out. So Utah, the Salt Lakes. What is it?
Salt Lake City.
Lake Powell.
No.
Monument
Salt,
Valley.
The where all the salt.
Salt Lake City.
No. Well, yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. They flew it, but it was a different name of it. But we're the actual Salt.
Okay.
You know, it's in the film that I'm going to tell you in a second.
Oh yeah.
So drove. It was all first class. You know, first class flight. Driving a caravan of cars.
Yes.
Get out there.
The best.
And I had this line, and you may remember it. This could be the last night on earth. You don't want to die a virgin, do you?
Oh,
Independence Day.
Yes, dude.
So I went, I had this line. I didn't have the part that I wanted. I was going to play the brother or something like the boyfriend, mm-hmm. the other boyfriend. So go see the film, you know, months later. And that line, that classic line is in there. And that part that I had been up for, that I was so bummed about not getting, didn't even make the cut of the film. And I end up with this amazing line. And of course, the film and the whole, and like, it's the biggest movie ever.
I don't know if there's been big movies, but like that movie to me seemed like,
that movie kicked off Big Willy Weekend. And I think that's all you have to say.
It was the first movie we saw something like that happening to, like, the White House, like the effects. Yeah. Like,
I remember,
what was that premiere like?
I mean, you know, Will Smith and everybody. I'm just, I lied. I didn't go.
You weren't even.
I was going to lie my way through that. I was like, wait a second. I have no memory. No, I didn't.
That was.
Wait a second, I didn't go. I wasn't even invited.
Even doing that. You weren't even invited?
No, it's like, a classic I was like a line. Day player. You know, I don't invite day players to Will Smith movies. I mean, who am I? It's Will Smith.
Yeah, but dude, we quoted that line, man.
It was a good line.
That line has been parodied in so many other films.
Yeah.
Like, just a version of that. Like, well, you know, world's going to end. Like that's. Like, now it's sort of like the quintessential. Like, the way in every action movie, at some point, the guy has to look around and say, "We've got company." Like, every action movie, that line
Welcome
has to be
to Earth?
Yeah.
Come on, that's one of my favorites.
Now, your line has to be in some sort of apocalyptic film. Yeah. Like, that version of that line has to be in there.
It was funny. I think I was 16 or 17.
Yeah, that's
really,
crazy,
really young.
Dude.
And then Lisa Jacobs was the actress who I did at least 2 other projects with. So it was kind of an interesting to work with her again years later. But we did stuff when we were young. Yeah, we did stuff when we were young. I did a show for Nickelodeon called Atomic Tommy.
Yes, Atomic dude.
And you know what? It was actually
before my time.
It was actually the other show that was up against Secret Life of Alex Mack. And I didn't get picked up. but it was a show that I could make things like explode. It was really Atomic Tommy, you know. I would make the bully like turn into a giant, and
dude, that's amazing.
I did that show when I was like, I don't know, 14 or 15, and didn't get picked up, so bummed. But I ran into a Nickelodeon executive years later, and he told me the story. He was like, yeah, it was between you and Alex Mack, and you picked Alex Mack, and
you're like, well, nope. Maybe a good decision overall, but good. Hey,
yeah, but what about resurrecting
Atomic Tommy?
Now you're passing it down to your kid.
Yeah,
they could dig that out of a drawer somewhere in Nickelodeon and say, "Come on, guys!
Hey, we're bringing Will and Grace back. We might as well bring back Atomic Tommy."
That's the conversation they're having.
I'm gonna.
Atomic Tommy was the Will and Grace of Nickelodeon. Do you have any crazy? I'm sure there. I mean, Seventh Heaven to me is like you put that in the box of like all time shows childhood. That shaped. Like, is there any amazing behind-the-scenes stories or just like another favorite episode, something again that you remember so dearly from that experience?
Great question.
So I can journal about it?
Is
Jessica Biel secretly a Nazi? We don't know it.
We definitely not.
Nice. Oh, welcome back to Brad's weird soundbites.
We can cut that out.
Yeah, right? For sure. We'll cut most of Brad out. We do it every episode.
Absolutely.
We're keeping the part about him humping legs.
Sure. Energy.
That's a good part. Yeah. Yeah. I would keep that part.
It's the best part.
And I had a little plug. There was a little punchline.
Yeah. You were the stalker of them alone.
You know, what an interesting experience at that time to be working with some of the, you know, I remember there was a director from Gunsmoke. So some of the real,
pros of the biz.
Yeah, but guys that had been around for like 30, 40 years. Then the flip side of it was so regimented. Like, you couldn't change a word. If you wanted to change a word, it had to go, you know, up the channel to Brenda Hampton and all. So it took me a little while. In fact, it was great training ground to be an excellent actor in every aspect of being an actor. So I was kind of like my college through those years. And I started at 7, I think I was 18, you know, 18 mm-hmm. to like 20, 22. I did it for like 3-4 years off and on. So, you know, I really appreciated that, and it was such a sweet show. I got to the point where, you know, Jessica was leaving the show, and that was kind of a crossroads for me where I just didn't necessarily see myself hanging out in the Camden house.
Yeah. Well, right, because
without Jessica, I was like, I don't know where I'm going to go with this.
Yeah, your girlfriend on the show is gone.
And I'm still there with my kid. I was just, you know, at that moment, my creative, ego, it was like, I don't know, are they going to write me? I'm out of here.
Yeah.
So I could have. Probably shoulda, but who knows? Again, you just got to take it for what it is. I wouldn't be here now if I did something like that.
Yeah, that is cool that there are experiences like that do like kind of reel you in, because like, you know, in a lot of things, improv is so welcomed. It's shit, man. The writing was great, and it's like that, like for them to have the, you know, be cognizant of like, yo, like let's just fucking, we're gonna make this the best and do that. And I'm sure like, you know, there's other ways to be creative and find moments organically, but
it was a style too that they were, that it took me a while to understand that they wanted it to be this kind of verbatim, and that's why the show had this crispy, clean kind of feel to it. Mm-hmm. It was not, you know, your typical, you know, what's the right word for that? You just said it, improvisational show. It was a very like a cookie cutter show, and that's what people loved about it, and that's what it was. And so they just wanted to stay true to what they wrote, and that's, you know, that's what was appreciated.
Did you get crazy fan letters or things sent to you, or?
You know, in the very young, early years, you know, when the teen magazines were really happening. That's,
yes, and speak I to that, even, please.
Yeah, well, I wasn't...
Bonkers. You're on the walls of millions of people's rooms. That's fucking bonkers to me, dude.
Well, I was in, and for those that remember, I was on a show with Ed Asner called Thunder Alley. And I was on the show, and I was working next door in the same actual studio, stage as Home Improvement. So between that stage had a bomb gone off, every teen magazine would be out of business. You had Jonathan Taylor Thomas,
Zachary Ty Bryan, Tara Noah Smith. Why do I know that off the top of my head?
All in one building. So that was, you know, again, where it was, that was just madness. There was a box of mail coming every week. And, you know, to this day, I feel not bad, but I just wish I could, you know, have responded. Actually, I think I have some of those letters, and I'm always tempted to like go pull out a letter from 1990.
Well, if you don't mind responding to my letter now, that would be great, live on the air, and I can pull up what I wrote.
Okay, that would be amazing. That would be fun, right? Well, to try, and this may be something we work on.
Yeah.
get a letter, track down the girl, read back her letter to her, and, you know, 20 years later, what do you think?
Well, I mean, you pretty much just did that by leaving a voicemail on
Has she called back, by the way?
She hasn't. I've been staring at my phone, and I text her. I'm like, listen to your voicemail, and you're going to shoot yourself if you don't call me back. But
how about we just do this? I'll pretend to be a girl writing a letter, and you answer to the letter.
Okay.
Hi, Andrew. This is Stephanie. Wow, I can't believe I'm actually getting to write a letter to you. This is crazy. I have all of your posters on my wall. My mom actually says that I don't have any more wall space, but I'm like, fuck you, bitch. There is more wall space. I just have to put them up in her room. I want to know, is Wilson, what's his favorite food? Oh, and you can respond back to me in this letter. Improv.
Hi, Katie. So glad you have.
It's Stephanie. Thank you.
Stephanie. I do a lot of these, so Stephanie.
It's all good. It's all good.
Okay, great. I'll call you what I want to call you.
Yeah, okay. Oh, my God.
So I'm looking at your wall now.
Yeah.
I don't know how I got into your room.
No, it doesn't matter. I'm not asking any questions.
I see that they're not all me, and I'm wondering why you have Jonathan Taylor Thomas up on the wall.
Well, I was a Tim Allen fan before I was a Keegan fan.
Okay.
And so anything, Tim Allen kind of put his stamp on JTT. Okay. But if I can be honest, like, if you want me to take it down, I'll take it down. I don't even care. I don't even like that poster.
It would make me feel more comfortable since I'm in your room.
It's off, and other things can be off, but it's the lights, you pervert. Jesus.
Boy, this is really going south real quick. I think we should stop.
Thank you. Thank you so much for responding. Bye.
Bye-bye. Dude, what is it with that bye-bye that happens with girls? Bye-bye.
Right?
Bye-bye.
Well, you know what? That's your goal as a father, is to stop your daughter from...
She's already doing it. She goes,
really?
Bye-bye.
What?
I've already failed. I have to break that.
Dude, I can't even tell you how awesome this was.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. This was a really great chat.
For all you've done in your professional life, but also in your personal life with the church and helping people and
having a lot to the world.
And it's really cool to see, to tie it all in, to see something come full circle that way. So just want to thank you for doing that. Thank you for being on this podcast. And thank you for making my sister's dreams come true. I'm sure.
Well, dude, he sent a birthday video to my sister on her birthday.
Like, oh, that's right.
She lost her shit, dude.
Oh, man.
And it's like, I felt weird asking, but I was like, dude, I'm just, you don't ask, you don't get. Like,
throw it out there.
Worst he's going to say is like, hey, man, I don't do birthday videos. I'm not doing your podcast now either. Fuck off. Sincerely, Keegan. And I'm like, all right, at least I got the email.
Or I'll say, Venmo me $5 and I'll
do it. And I would have done that too, Good night, everybody.
Thank you all so much.
Thanks, bud.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the Roaring Twenties. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.